Deja vu, we're down to two. Welcome to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. We are just jam-packed today. Let's get right to it. I'm Danny Clayton, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Hey.
It's great to be here.
I like that. You're jumping right in. Dave Spano, President and CEO. Hey, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. And of course, that is right. Deja vu down to two. And of course, we know we try to stay out of politics, but we can't avoid it, especially when it comes to economics. And we had a number of things that came out this week, not only Super Tuesday, but the State of the Union political rally that we saw this week. And of course, we look at it in the context of economics and did some of those stocks begin to move? And you and I were looking at, you know, Biden related stocks, and they did have a bump after this week.
That's correct. And I think that investors really need to kind of think about how the market anticipates the outcome. If you look at how did energy stocks do after President Trump was actually elected? Not very well. How did green stocks do after Biden was elected? Not very well. But before they were elected, that's when they had their rally. And we saw that movement in some of those green-oriented stocks, even in the prediction markets, which are not exactly the what we'd call the thickest markets as far as lots of buying and selling, but even that showed a little bit of a narrowing of the gap between Trump and Biden, where it becomes more of a coin flip, or maybe it becomes an opportunity for a third party to spoil the party.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have to watch what RFK Jr. or perhaps a Green Party does. But of course, election year patterns is the reason that I bring this up. And we're starting to see a typical election year pattern. And that is because both sides think that their guy is going to win. And we're starting to see a rally begin to erupt.
That's correct. And this is the earliest in quite a long time that we've pretty much known who the candidates for presidency are going to be. We've always known that there were a number of them, right? But you don't get through the primaries, or it's not until you get through the primaries that you find out who's actually going to be representing the opposition. Usually it's the incumbent is obviously, you know, hands down favorite to take the nod from their party to run for president. But this is the earliest that we've seen it. And I think that the State of the Union, it was directly and squarely pointed at drawing a distinction between Biden and Trump. Biden didn't have to worry about, is he going to be campaigning against, say, Haley or Trump? He knew who it was going to be.
And that is early. That is exactly right. And of course, we're talking about the economy, and the economy appears to be strong by some measures. We did get a payroll report this week, and it was better than we expected it was going to be. And we saw an ADP report adding 140,000 jobs. But of course, as an economist, you opened up the hood and looked underneath it, and you saw some things that you want to talk about.
That's correct. Yeah, with the payroll report especially, there are two of them where you have the establishment survey. So they ask employers how many people are on your payrolls, and then they ask households, are you employed? So you have these two different reports, and they've been giving conflicting answers. And that's one of the reasons why we saw the 275,000 payrolls created, but the unemployment rate went up because actually households were saying that fewer people were employed. Now, we've seen this in the past, and typically the establishment survey, that non-farm payroll number, is a little bit more reliable. But when I looked at the details of the report, it was mainly the what we would say economically insensitive areas, healthcare and government, that added the most jobs. We did see some continued strength from leisure and hospitality, which is maybe just a leftover residual from that whole you only live once phenomenon coming out of COVID. So a little bit of weakness there. It's still strong. Don't get me wrong. It's just that it's not as strong as what it was just a few months ago.
And let's talk about that. You mentioned that the unemployment rate has gone up, and it has gone up. It's 3.9%, and it was 3.4%. And there is an old adage that you like to look at, which is if it goes up by 50 basis points or a half a percent, that we begin to see a slowing of the economy. What do you think of that?
That's correct. That's called the SOM rule. It's named after an economist who really looked at the data. And it's just a rule of thumb saying that when the three-month moving average, so if it consistently is up at 3.9%, so if we have a few more months where it's 3.9% or higher, that historically has been correlated with going into a recession or at least a slowdown.
Right.
When we dig into it and look at it state by state, as far as the unemployment rates by states, there are a number of them who have gone through recessions technically, but really I would say very mild recessions, because when you go from 3.4% to 3.9, that's not all that that bad,
right?
I mean, that would be a kind of a very weak beer kind of recession.
A weak beer. And it's about watching this unemployment rate, because if it will there be an acceleration or a slowing of the economy, and that's something we're going to have to pay attention to. And who is definitely paying attention to this is the Federal Reserve. They're meeting again this month, and it's obvious that they're not going to lower rates this month, but they're starting to say they're getting confidence right now.
That's correct. When Chair Powell was testifying before Congress this past week, he said that they are close to having enough confidence to start cutting rates. They don't feel as though they need to send the economy into a recession in order to tame the beast of inflation. And he has said that basically you can think about 1 to 2, maybe 3 cuts this year. He doesn't want to really telegraph it too much because he doesn't know how the data will play out. But so far, so good. And it does look like it's not going to be a March rate cut. It could be something closer to maybe June instead.
And of course, we're starting to see some confidence come back in the market. Some of it is FOMO, fear of missing out, but the economy is still on strong standing right now. And the second part of that is earnings have been good, and the comparisons are going to be beatable as we move into the next quarter.
That's right. We did have an earnings recession in 2022 and in 2023. Kind of sets a low bar, and a lot of people were caught flat-footed, maybe being too conservatively positioned with portfolios, and that's why we've seen this flood of people coming back into the markets, driving prices higher. That can continue. You know, the trend is your friend until it no longer is.
Right.
I mean, it can turn rather quickly, but it typically takes a while for those expectations to start turning a little bit more bearish, and still, I think they're in that bullish channel.
And Danny, there's $8.8 trillion on the sidelines, and that may find its way back into equities at some point. So obviously, knowing how your portfolio is positioned right now is so important.
And we do that with our free portfolio review, and we can help. AnnexWealth.com. You click the Get Started button. That's our week in review. It's always available on demand at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, also in the Axiom newsletter. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, Saturday, March 9th. Still to come, we're going to discuss the value of an advisor. It's a great way to know the difference. That is for sure. Thanks for listening. We're going to be right back on 620 WTMJ. We are back. Fiduciary advice, comprehensive strategies, empowering education. That is what this show is about. It's an hour long, but really it just gives you a glimpse of what Annex Wealth Management does. Get the real picture. Head to the website this weekend and especially read the Know the Difference checklist. We think that is key. In the studio, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management, along with Dave Spano, our President, CEO.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Of course, we talk about where we are. Are we bearish? Are we bullish? And we're kind of right in between, Brian.
I would say so. You know, we've had a great run from those October 2022 lows, caught a lot of people by surprise. This past year, in October 2023, we had another sell-off. It wasn't as bad as when you go back to 2022. But what happened was growth was just surprisingly good. It caught people flat-footed, and so people are beginning to chase the rally. And so we would say that in this situation, growth will likely continue to be positive, and it's hard to fall up a moving escalator. So as long as those earnings keep marching higher, we think that there is a foundation for this rally. So it's probably a little bit too soon to be bearish, but you don't want to get too bullish either, because people run the risk of being sucked in to maybe overly valued stocks, things that are moving based on momentum. And the worst thing is when you have what's called a momentum crash. All of a sudden, you know, that trend is your friend until it suddenly starts turning on you.
It's too soon to be bearish, but too late to be bullish. And the reason why we say that is because what an incredible rally we've seen a number of these AI stocks, NVIDIA leading the way. And of course, right now we look at some of this information, but it's not, we don't want to be Pollyanna-ish because of the fact that there is some things we need to look at. And one of the things you and I were talking about earlier this week is what's happening in the canals.
Oh, yes. Panama Canal, and then you look over at the Suez Canal, there are still issues there. In the Panama Canal, there's issues as far as with the low water levels because of the lack of rain that they've had. That's causing some shipping delays. The Suez Canal, you still have with the Houthi rebels attacking.
And that ship sank this week.
It did, exactly. So that's continuing to escalate. Now, thankfully, when we look at some of the reports from companies that we listen to, and even included in the beige book from the Federal Reserve, they made reference to this, those canal issues are causing maybe one-off problems for specific companies, increasing costs. But thankfully, it's nothing like the shipping issues that we had during COVID. So it's a problem, but it's not necessarily a massive problem.
And so right now, corporations are watching this and they're trying to get right-sized with all of this information, these facts and information that comes at them. And of course, that's what you should do as well, folks, is make sure your portfolio is aligned with all of these facts and circumstances. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's going to be a lot of changes between now and the election in November.
And we are built to help. Investment, retirement planning, tax planning, and estate planning, the teams that you hear on this radio show every single week are there for you. And that includes Dave, that includes Brian, but a whole lot more. By the way, let me put a quick plug in for the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee and the SWAT podcast, which is here on Mondays. A lot of detail. If you really want to dig in deep, that is a great place to go. It's available early Monday mornings. We push that up, and that's wherever you get your podcast. But that is the SWAT podcast from Annex Wealth Management. Hey, heads up, big webinar Tuesday, 10 a.m., Dave Spano, John McCure, is America's debt economic quicksand? What does it mean for your financial plan? Very, very hot topic. Hope you can join us. Sign up, annexwealth.com/events. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? Value. We all want value. It's human nature to want the best deal on goods or services. Could be a pizza, could be a truck, might as well be with your financial plan. You've also heard the old adage, you get what you pay for. Brandon Lehman is director of Annex Private Client and a wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management. Welcome back.
Danny.
When it comes to your investment and retirement plan, the value of an advisor is important. We want that for you. Russell Investments breaks down the value of an advisor. They use simple letter codes, A, B, C, T. A is active rebalancing of investment portfolios, and we talk about it a lot. Active, there's your key word there.
That's exactly right. Being active in watching this. What Russell looked at is versus the set it and forget it mindset that you see across the board, you know, especially when somebody's a do-it-yourselfer. And their math, as they looked at these statistics over the last 13 years, is through active rebalancing, having somebody watching this on your behalf, you've actually been able to reduce the volatility, according to their study, by just under 2%, 1.9%. So what does that mean? You're reducing the volatility, you're reducing the risk by working with somebody who's actively monitoring this and how it plays in your plan. Just from that standpoint, you're having somebody working on your behalf to reduce your risk. That's a fantastic opportunity to work with an advisor.
When talking about the value of an advisor, B stands for behavioral coaching. So what that implies, Brandon, is it's engaged relationship. That's both sides, right?
Well, it's both sides. It's being engaged, communicating with your advisor, communicating with your team. I think that's so important because I look at situations where people maybe make a financial decision. Again, we don't have to approve them, but we want to know, right? Yeah. We want to know what's going on. And we're going to tie this more, and the Russell study ties this more into the idea of chasing returns, right? So over the last 14 years of their study, they've seen that as people chase returns, meaning, oh, this stock is up, I'm going to go buy it. This stock is up, I'm going to go buy it. You know, jumping back and forth. Traditionally, they've actually been behind by almost 2.5% over that was 14 years because they're jumping all over the place, whereas keeping them focused on the long-term goals, the financial plan, how does it all play in, is what we do from a behavioral aspect. How do we keep you tied into the long-term gain to focus on what is important for your financial plan?
Brandon Lehman, director of Annex Private Client, wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management, talking about the value of an advisor. C stands for customized experience, family wealth planning. And that's the process. That's a journey.
This is really what Annex excels at. This is Annex, right? This is financial planning, customized, built out for you, covering a multitude of areas. This isn't just, here's your plan. You can reach this goal in the end by saving X amount. It's how do your taxes play into it? You know, estate planning, cash management, distribution, all these ideas that we work through. And again, people think that it isn't customized sometimes, but it truly is, even though we might use the same software for everything. Everybody's plan is substantially different with substantially different goals and outcomes and opportunities. What do we need to do? It's all of that customized put together with not just the wealth manager you work with, it's the entire team at Annex behind the scenes that is helping you achieve those goals that you don't necessarily see all the time but are working on your behalf.
What's the value of an advisor? At Annex, we think the answer is a lot. In the piece we saw from Russell Investments, T stands for tax smart investing. Big difference between preparation and planning.
Let's get that straight. Everybody thinks tax prep. That's compliance. you know, is looking backwards, right? It's almost April. Let's file your taxes. Did you do everything right? But planning is looking forward. It's looking at the investments. Are we being strategic in what we purchase, what we sell, what we hold? Are we making the right decisions if we own a business, if we're a small business owner? Have we made the right decisions? And that's where Annex steps in with our tax team. And if you don't have a CPA, we'll help you out. We'll guide you. Or if you have one, we're going to partner with them and we're going to share ideas back and forth. Typically, it gets to the point where you're not even involved because you just say, you guys talk about it. But we're there looking for the best opportunities to build a solution in your plan to be efficient, because there is a lot of efficiency wasted if you don't look at this and include that whole tax picture. And in Russell's study, it can be upwards of 1.7% gained by being tax efficient. And what I mean by that is just the way they break it out is 1.7% of opportunity that isn't lost because you're ignoring the tax situation.
In our final minute, let's talk a little bit about the value of being a fee-only fiduciary.
From that aspect, when you're a fee-only fiduciary, it's taking all of those areas we just talked about and dialing it in and saying, we are working in your best interest to cover all of these areas, and all of these areas are what's important to help you achieve that final objective. And we know the objective typically is to retire. Sometimes it's philanthropic, it's other things, but really it's to achieve that final objective that you, as Mr. and Mrs. Client, have laid out for us to help guide you to.
And then a quick word about Annex Private Client.
Private Client, it's a great team that we have here at Annex that really focuses more on those complex situations, right? The business owners, the high net worth, where we're focused on complexity driven solutions to guide you year in and year out, is a great team. And it's more of a one-on-one approach. I can't say it enough. We have an amazing team at Annex Private Client.
Brandon Lehman, Director of Annex Private Client, Wealth Manager, Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Danny.
Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Time for news. Let's head to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. We're back, and here comes Ask Annex. Got a question for us? You head to our website, annexwealth.com. Look for the Ask tab. We get back to everybody. Some wind up on the radio. We would love to hear from you, client or not. In the studio, Fred Coleman, CFP and a wealth manager. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Danny.
And we got Matt Morsey, investment team manager, also a CFP. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Danny.
All right, question number one, big one. I'm 33, earning $120,000 a year. My employer offers options to contribute to a Roth and traditional 401k. Should I split my contribution percentages to max out both, or am I making too much to reap the benefits of a Roth 401k? I've heard that the Roth is best when younger and making less money, but unsure on the threshold for the most benefit.
Good question, and this is a question, probably one of the most common questions that we get, and it's a very important decision, even though, you know, it's just a click of a button to go on that 401k website and make the adjustment. Generally speaking, Roth is beneficial for younger individuals because that's assuming that your income will go up in the future, and in turn, your taxes will likely go up in the future as well. Also, the good thing about the Roth is that you just get the taxes out of the way. So that's the other argument for the Roth. You don't have to worry about it. You pay it now. You benefit from all the gains. You never have to pay it again. In order to give you a better assessment, you need a financial plan that projects tax rates for the rest of your life. Because a lot of times there is an opportunity where your taxes will be much lower. And for many people, it's when they retire. So between the time that you retire and you have to start taking those guaranteed income sources like the required minimum distribution, that's when you usually have time period where your taxes are single digits or sometimes even zero. So what I lean towards in these situations is the traditional, because not only can you take those tax savings that you're getting and invest it in other ways, but you also defer the option to pay taxes. So in other words, you can choose over the next 40 years until you turn 73 when you want to pay taxes. You didn't mention marriage. You didn't mention kids. Those are things that could potentially lower your taxes in the future. There also may be tax laws that are passed in the next 40 years where you'll have the opportunity to decide when you want to go ahead and do what's called a Roth conversion. You can do that at any point. It doesn't have to be with the actual initial contribution. So investing in that traditional 401k just gives you a little more flexibility. But once you put the money in a Roth, there's no going back to the traditional.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that makes working with a partner like Annex so powerful. Being able to sit down with somebody like Fred, walk through your unique situation, use the software that we have access to in our financial planning team, and really finding something that's really customized and specific to you, I think is incredibly powerful. Being able to look 30, 40 years down the road and going, okay, if I make this decision today, what does that look like? And what would I prefer when I'm older in order to be able to access that money? What's going to be important to me? We don't know all of those things now, but we could at least get ideas of what that possibility looks like. The other thing I would look at too is, are you getting an employer match and how are they making that match? If they're putting that match into a traditional 401k, that money is going to compound. You're going to pay the taxes on that later on. It might be a good idea to have some of that money go into a Roth just because you could balance those things out. What's really powerful in retirement is having different buckets of money in different tax shelters or different tax rules so that you are allowed that customization that you want. And hey, this year it makes sense I pull money out of this account. Next year might make sense someplace else, or maybe I'm taking different levels out of different, but it just gives so much flexibility and freedom to you to be able to make those decisions later on in life. I think it's super powerful.
If I could go back in time and talk to the 25-year-old me, I'd do a couple of things. The first is I would really say, hey, consider this Roth a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I'd punch myself in the mouth for all the dumb things I'm going to do after 25 and now, and then a whole lot more. All right, ask Annex our next question. Why do 401k target date plans invest so heavily in international stocks?
It's a great question, and it's really a matter of perspective. In the U.S., just like across the world, we have what's called a home country bias, which means that wherever you live, you're generally going to invest more of your money there than you are in a lot of other places. It just comes naturally. Now, the U.S. markets right now is about 60% of the overall stock market, but that changes over time. We've had about a 15-year stretch where U.S. stocks have outperformed international stocks on a pretty consistent basis. If you go back 15 years ago, it wasn't 60-40. It was more like 50-50. And even before that, there was a time where U.S. was 40% of that market, and it fluctuates over time. So looking at that, that number is going to change. But what target dates are trying to do is give you a general asset allocation that's going to be flexible over time to follow what they call a glide path, which essentially is the closer and closer you get to retirement, they're going to become more and more conservative to match what they perceive to be your risk tolerance. So what they're going to do is they're going to match those allocations, shifting from stocks to bonds over time. But primarily underneath that hood, they're going to try to keep allocations somewhat consistent to a global experience or a global thing. Not because they're dealing with global investors, which they might be, but because they're trying to diversify and give you that range of outcomes that lowers risk but gives you that return. So it's going to measure somewhere pretty close to what that global market's going to look like.
Hey, running out of time, but here's a quick one. Guy's uncle was a remodeling contractor, found old stock certificates, was going to pitch them, but then he offered them to the nephew. It's not finders keepers, is it?
No, it doesn't work like that. Those stock certificates are going to be registered to a specific person, so it's not much you'll be able to do with them.
Fred Coleman, CFP Wealth Manager, Annex Wealth Management, thanks.
Thank you.
Matt Morrissey, Investment Team Manager and a CFP, thank you.
Thank you.
It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management, and I'm sure you've noticed, we're in an election year. A lot of time between now and November, so lots of media, lots of arguments over coffee, lots of direct mail. All sorts of myths as well about what an election does or doesn't do to the economy. How can you make sense of this? Stick around. We've got a special presentation coming to MechWan that you won't want to miss, plus a webinar version as well. Joining us, Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services, Annex Wealth Management. Hey, Tom.
Hello, Danny.
Deanne Phillips, Director of Client Learning and Development, CFP, CDFA at Annex Wealth Management. Hey, Deanne.
Hello, Danny.
You two have had this roadshow going, the Investigating Election Myths, for several presentations already. I hear great feedback from the audience. Really kind of curious, what's the general sense of mood from those who have been in the audience? The anticipation? Is it trepidation? Is it shock and awe?
Yeah, I think they're concerned when they come in. You know, everyone is looking at last year's portfolio results and the Fed finally calming down with interest rates and wondering what it'll look like in this potentially politically contentious arena.
Yeah, from what I can tell so far, there's genuine curiosity and a willingness to hear what we're going to tell them in terms of myths. Because I think people do come in with these myths. That's why we're addressing them. But the audiences that we've been in front of so far have been open to maybe reconsidering an alternative.
So and they participate too. Yes, we give them a chance to participate. It's very fun.
Yeah, that's the good part. Are they kind of gritting their teeth, you know, with what is coming?
Coming into it, I think that's probably a safe way to say it. But I think by the time we've been done with each of the ones we've done so far, people have been having some fun and the mood is very much lightened.
We try to keep it light as much as possible.
Tom, the media's not helping this. How bad is it out there?
It's bad, Danny. When it comes to the media, it's all about clicks. It's all about agitation and getting more eyeballs. And we know that disasters really help on getting eyeballs. But there are ways to tune that out and ways to be more judicious in how you go about looking for the information you're seeking.
Election year myths, that's what we're talking about. Deanne, you've been involved with financial and retirement planning for a long time. Have the myths around election years always been with us? Are they getting worse? Are they getting amplified?
Well, the fact that we are exposed to an average of 7.5 hours of media every day, and certainly that gets focused in on election the closer we get to it. And, you know, whether that's we're scrolling through the phone and we're seeking something out, or whether we're in the dentist office and it's incidental to the TV behind us, you know, we're exposed. And so this can create a lot of agitation. It makes us jump to those heuristics or rules of thumb that we know, and it makes us nervous about the implications on our own financial plan.
There's a major myth that centers around one party being inherently better for the markets or economy. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was probably everyone's favorite myth, the one where everyone leaned closely to hear, okay, where is this going? There is data to support all the stuff. So Deanne and I, mostly Deanne, did tons of research on this. And as we go through and you see, we'll give you historical data to say, this is what's either supporting or refuting the myth.
Is this a myth or not? Markets react positively to a more business-friendly party. Is there data?
Yes, there is. And I think that is a way of framing differently. One party is inherently better for the markets or the economy than another party. And to answer whether that myth is true or not, you know, conventional wisdom supports that it leads us to jump to the conclusion, or that the myth may suggest the markets perform better under a Republican president because of the historically business-friendly talking points. But actually, when we look at the data, it shows that the stock markets actually perform better under a Democratic president. There are a lot of caveats, of course, to that.
Lots of caveats.
Election year myths, there are plenty. Stick around. We've got a special presentation in person coming to MEC1. Don't want to miss. And webinar version as well. With Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services, Deanne Phillips, Director of Client Learning and Development, CFP and a CDFA at Annex Wealth Management. How about this? Divided government, good for the economy?
Yes or no, Danny? Depends on how you look at it. That is a very popular one. Deanne mentioned the president's party, but then you've got to remember there's the House of Representatives, there is the Senate. Mm-hmm. Lots of different combinations you can have here. And so I think the most encouraging thing that we found is just the strength of the American economy, regardless of who was in charge. And that was the most encouraging thing for me.
A lot of people will come in and ask us about volatility leading up to the election, and there's actually some good research that we're going to reveal around that also that's kind of surprising for people.
Got to tune in for that one.
Bottom line, elections are times when misinformation can proliferate. It can cause problems. Take your time, sort it out. Be careful of confirmation bias. Seek trusted sources who can provide good insight without bias. Deanne, we got a special in-person education get-together coming to MEC1 and a webinar version. This is a great chance to explore this topic deeply. You and Tom are going to be doing this.
We are. Election year investment myths. We'll be doing it in webinar form on Tuesday, March the 19th at 2 p.m. Central Time. Again, that's webinar. And then we'll be live at Zarletti in MEC1 at 1515 West MEC1 Road on Wednesday, March the 20th at 6 p.m. You can go to annexwealth.com under the events tab and sign up. I'm guessing that the Zarletti one will fill up.
Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services, Annex Wealth Management. Looking forward to it.
Me too, Danny. Thanks.
Deanne Phillips, Director of Client Learning Development, CFP, CDFA at Annex. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. We're going to take a quick break, and we are going to be back. This is 620 WTMJ. We're back. Reminder, three easy ways to access content from Annex Wealth Management. You can do it on the air. You can do it on the stream. You can do it on the podcast. This show is going to go live on Spotify or any other podcast platform at the top of the hour. Brian Jacobson is our chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano, our president and CEO.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. You know, clients come to us where they are at, and so we try to align them with the right advisor. And sometimes there are in our Ignite program where you're just starting to get going. Most of our clients are in our comprehensive wealth. But then we have Annex Private Client with the more complex needs. And when we get into that, we talk about asset allocation like we do across all different verticals. But when we talk about Annex Private Client and the verticals there, the asset allocation might look a little different.
It does. When you get into the higher net worth area with Private Client, oftentimes the toolbox is just a little bit bigger. We have to consider, you know, like, let's say, are there any restricted stock options that they have to take into consideration? What are their liquidity needs? Maybe they don't need to necessarily have as much liquidity as what somebody in like the comprehensive wealth area might. And
right.
So as a result, we can start considering what are sometimes called illiquid assets or semi-liquid assets, commonly known as alternatives.
And so let's talk about that, because the normal asset allocation that most people know about, and that would be cash or money markets, for example, and it would be equities or stocks, and it would be fixed income, which are also bonds, right? But there's also a fourth piece that you're talking about right now, which is alts. But that's been around for a long time. A lot of times it was either real estate or hard assets like gold, but that has expanded.
It has. And actually, alternatives is almost like this catch-all phrase. Did you listen to alternative music when you were in high school?
I listened to it. I'm not sure I was an alt guy, but yes.
Yeah. Now, some of this is what I would call the Nickelback effect. If you remember, when they started, they were kind of known as an alternative band.
You're looking at Danny Clayton, who's been a disc jockey for 40 years.
I woke back up with alternative music.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I figured I'd draw him in on this. But remember, they were alternative, then they became mainstream, and then they became a bit of a meme, right, as far as the idea that maybe they sold out or something. Now, don't get me wrong. They're incredibly talented. I don't listen to that type of music necessarily. But alternatives are almost going that direction where they're becoming more mainstream. With some people, they're almost becoming more like a meme in the sense that, you know, is there really great value there? Now, we really do a tremendous job of working with managers to understand the process, the structure, and the pricing of these things, because some of the alternatives, they can, you really do need to know what you own and how much are you paying for it.
Right. And you talk about how that is built. And of course, you talked about private debt. You talked about private assets. There's a difference. Or private equity, for example, those are different. In real estate, for example, is it, you know, when you talk about real estate, is it a duplex on the corner or is it publicly traded industrial REITs?
Yes.
Major difference.
Oh, yes. And that's one of the reasons why most people probably don't necessarily need alternatives in their portfolio, because if you look at your own balance sheet, if you have a home, you already have exposure to real estate. But for some people, they have the financial wherewithal where maybe they want to little bit more of that. And is it in a specific building, or do they want it to be more diversified where they're buying into a pool of real estate investments that's perhaps diversified across not just geographies, but types? Is it office real estate? Is it retail? Is it a data center? One of the areas that we've been getting a lot more questions about is really about in the private credit area.
Right.
So basically, think of these as types of bonds that you can get, and maybe they have a little bit higher yield than what you can find in the public markets. But you really need to know the structures, because these are unique opportunities and requires a lot of due diligence to know what you own.
So, for example, there's a New York banking firm that says, I'm going to lend some tool and die company in the Midwest some money. It's generally going to be at a higher rate, but they do this pretty often, and they have a whole cadre of guys who call around the country looking to place this money. And then, of course, where does that come from? It comes from institutional buckets.
That's correct. And most of these strategies have historically been available to institutional investors like pensions and endowments. But now, really, because of the just vast number of opportunities out there, consider that there are about 4,500 publicly traded companies in the United States, but there's probably about 45,000 private companies out there that people can invest in through private equity or perhaps make loans to through private credit.
And I do want to follow up, and we'll do that again perhaps next week, because of the fact, as a professor, you've seen that a lot of these higher education institutions have placed a lot of their endowment money in this market.
Dave Spano, our president and CEO, Annex Wealth Management, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Danny.
And Dr. Brian Jacobson, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll read you, a Wall Street Journal, look for you this weekend, maybe?
Hopefully, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There we go. Before we head out, another reminder, Dave Spano, John McCure, Tuesday, 10 o'clock for the webinar. It's America's Debt Economic Quicksand. What does it mean to your financial plan? Hot topic. Hope you can join us. Sign up at annexwealth.com/events. Thanks for listening. See you next Saturday, 10. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.